Welcome to M&A Radio. I'm your host, Elizabeth Gordon. Welcome, everybody. This is M&A Radio, and I am your hostess, Elizabeth Gordon. And I guess I'm a little nervous here. I've got an awesome guest here, and I'm fumbling with my microphone here in the studio, but we have an excellent show for you today. Mr. Stuart Brady here is here with us from The Business House. And The Business House is a boutique merger and acquisitions firm. Stuart has a lot of experience in the field, and I am very excited personally to hear what he has to share with us today. So, Stuart, grab a microphone and welcome to the show.
Well, thanks, Elizabeth. It's a pleasure to be a part of this.
So I want to start off by helping our guests understand a little bit more about the context of what you do. Tell me a little bit about your background to start off.
Sure. Grew up in Atlanta, or at least been here since I was three, so I definitely call it home. We've grew up in a very family or entrepreneurial family, and so we've had a lot of experiences and exposure around the kitchen table. I've been pretty much self-employed my entire life, and highly recommend that for many people.
It takes a different kind of person.
Definitely.
Not everybody can do it.
No.
And I'm sure you've met a lot, so many different business owners over the years that you've kind of seen who it works well with and who it's not quite suited for.
Sure.
Now, your company helps business owners with their options once they've started their business. So a lot of people in America, that's, you know, kind of the American dream, start my business. And there's a whole then what after you get a business going. Talk a little bit about that scenario for the business owner.
Sure. You can imagine the mergers and acquisitions having so many different facets. Our particular niche, or the one that I like to fulfill the most, is helping the business owners sell their enterprise. So in this case, they're approaching retirement and junior's not taking over. Management might or might not have the wherewithal to buy them out. They're looking at their other options in terms of selling it to a strategic buyer, a financial buyer, a private equity buyer, et cetera. So that's the niche that we like to focus on. But again, you can imagine from, you know, the Main Street businesses to Wall Street and everything in between.
So most business owners don't necessarily think about their exit strategy when they start off. True, false?
True. Unfortunately, it is very true. And, you know, if anybody's out there thinking about getting into business, it would be really to their benefit to kind of work the exit plan backwards. Have a plan in place before you start the process. And if you're already in the game, spend 20 minutes a day coming up with your exit plan. And it doesn't matter if you're approaching retirement now or 10 years from now. It's just, it's very important to have that plan in place because you have more options when you do.
So as a business owner, you're like inside the business, kind of inside the fishbowl, if you will. Whereas
Sure.
when you're looking to sell your business, you're pitching to all these people that are outside of the fishbowl. So how do you help people kind of switch their perspective of what it's like? What does a business actually look like from the buyer's point of view as opposed to the owner's point of view?
Sure. We definitely want to educate the buyers in the process, or I'm sorry, the sellers in the process of how their business will be visualized. And the first and foremost on that, you know, when you're the buyers will see it as profitability and scalability. You know, is there cash flow to support it? Is the business scalable? Do they have a unique product or proprietary service that gives them, you know, a life beyond?
Right. Like a magic formula, like the secret Coke formula,
exactly.
something like that. But I mean, let's think beyond that. So what are some other examples of what could be your magic formula, your secret sauce that gives your business intrinsic value beyond just what happens on a day-to-day basis?
Sure. I think it does, you know, it goes back to why, what is their unique proposition in the market? What do they have that's going to be compelling to somebody else and who they're going to sell it to eventually? So your best case is to develop a proprietary product or a unique service that in essence adds value. And it's easier said than done, of course, but that is the challenge.
Right. Well, when somebody, I mean, people tend to kind of romanticize their own business, right? They think it's fantastic and they think they've put in a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, you know, all of these years. And they come to maybe after 10, 15, 20 years into it and they think, all right, I'm ready to sell.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find that business owners have an accurate perception of the value of their business at that point in time?
That would be nice, but usually that's not the case. But again, depending on what their business is and how unique it is in the marketplace. I mean, we've dealt with examples where they were undervaluing their business because they did not recognize their entrees into certain distribution channels. Again, we prefer to sell the businesses strategically, meaning somebody recognizes that distribution channel or that product or that service that this company has, it's a lot cheaper to take them out than to try to grow it organically on their own. So we always prefer to sell the businesses strategically as opposed to, say, financially, where the person's just chasing anything that's shiny or looking for cash flow.
So do you help with the whole valuation process?
Yeah, it's definitely a part of the, it's definitely a part of the process. Typically, we outsource that to a third party, so somebody else is telling them that it's not as cute as they
so,
might think it is.
Right. The numbers came back. And
exactly.
But so that difference between the strategic buyer versus just the financial buyer. So mm-hmm. the numbers come back and say your business is worth, you know, $1 million. And so if you just go the financial route, you're really just looking to sell the acquirer on the idea of this is, you know, based on cash flows, I suppose, would mm-hmm. be the bulk of it.
Sure.
This is what the business is worth. The strategic buyer, that's a whole different ball game there. How does the business house help identify those who would be the right strategic buyers? Do owners usually know? Do they need some help kind of expanding how they think about that?
Absolutely. And through the process, and I can't reinforce that word enough, it's very much a process. On average, it takes 9 months from the time of the engagement to the time that we actually close the deal. I've been working on several deals for years, literally, because, again, the seller's agenda is not, I got to get out the door tomorrow, but I know that this is part of my process and my plan. In terms of the strategic buyer, they will see the value from so many different levels. I'm not sure if I'm answering that.
Like what kind of levels here? Sorry, I'm not going to let you get off that easy here.
All right.
Give me an example maybe of, I mean, I don't know if you can talk about some of your past clients or deals that you've done, but sort of an example of how maybe the synergy of one company buying another company would make that value even greater than strictly the financial value.
Sure. I'm trying to think about specifics that I can get into. Let's come back to that because
okay.
I'm not really sure how to if I want to go down that road. But there's a lot of scenarios where, again, it's a lot easier to take out that strategic buyer or at least to appeal to it. But in terms of who those buyers are, yes, the sellers typically know who the good buyers are because they're in those same industries. So you
okay.
can almost sell to an existing one. But again, you have to be able to manage that process. So that's where your broker or intermediary is going to help that process because you can't really – you have to have a competitive bidding process in the end to make it work. So in other words, you have to have multiple buyers bidding on the transaction. And to do that, again, working backwards, you've created or filled out extensive questionnaires and you put together a deal book and you've had a, you know, basically a call to action. And then that's where you can kind of have multiple people bidding at once and you
okay.
have to have that to truly maximize it.
So that is the goal. It's not to find one buyer. It's really to
Correct.
Find a two or three.
Several.
To
yes,
get
exactly.
them sort of
exactly.
pitching against each other.
And in terms of who those buyers are, they're in the same association. So it's almost like you can look at their associations and their groups that they're affiliated with. And typically it could be, you know, a little to the left, a little to the right of what their niche is, but somebody's going to say, it's easier for me to take them out than try to do this on my own.
So what types of businesses have, you know, the greatest potential in terms of the acquisition market?
The niche that we like to play in is in the manufacturing and distribution.
Okay.
And we're working with companies across the Southeast, predominantly in that space. Of course, service is good too, but typically with a service business, there's a longer earnout. You know, in other words, the seller gets paid over time instead of a, you know, full check at closing.
Whereas if you're carrying a lot of inventory or you own a warehouse or there's a lot of fixed assets, maybe.
Exactly. I mean, that all plays into it.
Now, what about the financing side of
That's a challenge.
most people aren't just writing one check when they buy a business. It's a much more complicated deal.
Much more. And depending, again, the size of the deal, we like to be in the $2 to $20 million range in terms of revenue, but again, under and over in many cases. But it's depending on, again, the type of the transaction and what it really looks like. And it's a very customized approach. So you go back to the owner, what is their time frame? What is their agenda? What is their preference? And then kind of work backwards from there.
So I'm curious what the whole interaction is with you and your clients. I mean, it's a long-term process.
Yes.
So you're probably not talking every single day for 9 months. But
no.
But how, you know, kind of give me a feel for the timeline. We talked a little bit about some of the key steps,
sure.
But how you're interacting with the client as you're bringing them through that process. Because that's quite a process.
It is. I mean, just in the last 30 days, we've signed up a couple new clients. One that I first started calling on 4 years ago, and the other I started calling on 2 years ago. So that's just, they've just now gotten to the point of, okay, let's do it. So you can imagine there's a lot of, you know, angst and anxiety and, you know, but then you cross that threshold and you can kind of see a lot of weight coming off their shoulders because it's a big process. But in terms of the steps, once the agreement's in place, then again, we're gathering as much information to better understand their business and their account structure and their distribution channels and their product and their services and their patents and just.
Okay, you know. So you've got to do a lot of
sure.
collecting of the data and
exactly.
the raw data to start to put together what this how you're going to position.
Figure out what they really have.
Right,
And what's their, again, unique selling proposition and who would be a good candidate for it. Then we build the database of, the database of the prospective buyers.
Okay.
Then we produce a two-page blind profile letting them all know about this opportunity, but in a very general way. So you're not giving away specifics, you're not giving away you know, what region they're in or their business, et cetera, but you give them a sense. And so you'd send that two-page profile to those folks and letting them know about this opportunity.
And how do you identify who goes on this list of the prospective buyers?
Looking at who else would be a good candidate for
them. Okay.
So you're kind of working through the weeds to figure out who would be a good candidate to take them out.
Okay.
So, again, strategically is the focus. We also have, jeepers, a lot of high net worth individuals that are always looking for jobs. And, of course, private equity is looking to add them to existing platforms to, package and build their entities.
So it's a mix of those kinds of.
And those are kind of the three baskets we play in
okay.
in terms of the buyers.
Okay. So now we've got the database of the buyers mm-hmm. and you've put together the blind prospectus.
Exactly.
What happens now?
Okay, now we've got the confidential business review or the deal book. And
okay,
that's,
the deal book.
Deal book.
That?
Ooh, it's exciting.
Yeah.
Pretty pictures and everything. Typically, they're around 30 pages long, and it gives the nuts and the bolts and everything relating to that business. So, you know, so you're doing a full SWOT analysis, you know, identifying
okay.
their strengths and weaknesses and opportunities and threats, and just all the way down to their labor force and their not their commissions, but their insurance plans. I mean, you need to know
right.
everything about
like
what their
are
business
they obligated
obligations
are. To.
Exactly. So you need to have that all put together in the book. And then, of course, the prospective buyers that have proven to us that they're qualified financially and strategically, then we would then release the deal book to them. But we don't just let that doesn't go out to anybody unless they've proven to us that they're capable of doing the deal.
Okay, so you've got to pass an
yeah,
initial
we make them
check.
Yeah, jump through some hoops. I hate to say it, but that's really
right. Well, that's part of the value that you're adding there
sure.
in terms of doing the transaction because the owner doesn't want to be.
War stories of owners trying to do it themselves, thinking they'll save it, the commission this
right.
time and the
like,
other, and it's just
for sale by owner.
Oh yeah,
like,
yeah let's
oh,
put
that,
a sign in the front
be.
Yard. Yeah, it doesn't work.
No, this is a much more sophisticated and fine-tuned approach
and
clearly much more effective.
Pay no attention.
Okay, so only the people that pass the muster get mm-hmm. the deal book.
Correct.
And then they are able to see the full picture of the
sure.
business. And then what happens at that point?
Site tours, management meetings, offers are back and forth, goes under contract, then the due diligence process begins, and they're just qualifying and clarifying everything that we've submitted in the prospectus to make sure that it's what they need. In the meantime, you know, we've financially qualified them up front, but they're working on getting their funding in place to make the deal happen, and hopefully closing in the 30 days after that.
And then does the owner just ride off into the sunset, or
depends on the deal? Yeah. I mean, and again, going back to that owner's agenda or perspective in terms of, they might want to stay involved for a period of time. They might want to, in essence, a second bite at the apple. So in other words, they get paid additionally when milestones are met. Again, depending on if it's a product or service, the process is a little different. But in essence, they get a big chunk of money, or as much as we can get for our clients, because that's who we're representing in the process, at closing. And then again, earnouts over a period of time, again, depending on what that seller would like to do.
Okay. And then, at that point, as the business transitions to new ownership or gets merged into the other company, I'm sure that's a whole nother business ball game.
Sure.
But depending on whether or not the owner has chosen to stay on board, they may or may not be involved in all of that effort.
Oh, yeah. And family dynamics play into it. There's just, again, so many variables that... They're a part of the process.
Do the acquirers typically make a lot of changes, or do they keep the business mostly intact because they bought it because they liked it the way it was?
Usually they keep it intact for a period of time, for sure, and because in most cases they're taking out the key management, but they're, for lack of a better word, the worker bees or key management is going to continue to run the business. I mean, they didn't.
Right.
We're not
Somebody
selling
still
jobs.
Has to make the donuts.
Yeah, exactly.
Or this thing isn't.
So this is all different than, again, somebody buying themselves a job. You know, when you look at the Main Street transactions, basically they're buying themselves a job. And this is a couple steps above there.
Right. Okay. Now, how does M&A activity fluctuate as you see economic fluctuations take place?
Does. I mean, in terms of access to capital, I mean, what's going on right now is, again, the baby boomers. You know, I heard a stat, 10,000 people are turning 65 every day in this country.
Yeah, that's unbelievable. Yeah.
I saw another one actually literally
fathom.
This 57 seconds. Every 57 seconds, somebody turns 65.
Wow.
It's just crazy. Now, I did not do the math backwards. If there's 57 seconds, 24 hours a day, does that total 10,000? But, somebody's doing that right now, I'm guessing.
Calculation.
Should have said that.
But so that's a really remarkable thing. I mean, we've all had our eye on the baby boomer trend, for decades now, and know what a huge ripple effect they tend to have. So with that many people approaching or reaching retirement age, that must mean there's a lot of business owners that are now thinking, all right, it's time to start looking at an exit strategy for this.
There will be. Yeah. I mean, you can almost see from a supply and demand perspective, there is right now, there's not a lot of good businesses on the market. I mean, there's some, of course, but there's not as many as there will be in the next 5 to 7 to 10 years. So there's going to be a glut of products. So again, if you're getting close to it, if you're thinking about it, the sooner you start this process, you might as well get ahead of the wave instead of be behind it. Because again, valuations will drop when there's so many more offers and opportunities out there.
Okay. So there's the supply and demand aspect.
Oh, yeah.
As well, if everybody's trying to sell
at the same time,
yours might not look as good,
mm-hmm. And with
or be
taxes,
worth as much.
Sure,
the buyers then got options.
And look at the interest rates, historically low levels right now.
Right,
capital gains are going to go up, I think, just because government's out of money and they're going to look to see what they can tap into. So you've got a lot of variables that play into it.
Now, you've been at this for so long, I'm sure that a lot of people know the company's reputation and seek you guys out for advice and embarking on this process. How do you typically find clients? How do you market your business?
Sure. Jeff Mary, shout out to him because this is his company. He's been doing it for 20 plus years and actually does a very good job. He's got a nice little team in place, probably a total of 8 of us that work in the business house. And he's been sending out mailers and letters and emails on a regular basis for 20 plus years. So the name has great cachet in the marketplace. I will stop in on see a client and say, I've been getting your letters for years. So from that standpoint, it's been very fruitful and a beneficial relationship. I've been in the game probably 8 years and been with Jeff probably 3 or 4.
So what do you find most interesting about the work that you're doing?
It gives you an all-access pass. You get to see all these different businesses and, kind of behind the scenes and, you know, some are really great businesses with incredible opportunities, and others like, ooh, you know, it's a buggy whip company. And there's not a future for it. So it's, you know, kind of emotionally, you know, a seesaw, because you just never know what you're going to see on a daily basis.
Right. Well, and if working so closely directly with the owners or the family that founded it or something like that, it's not just strictly, you know, a balance sheet. It's, there are a lot of people involved and emotions.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's much more beyond just the
business. And emotion is a key word there. And I think it's been said to me, we take the emotion out of the process for the seller, because they are so vested in the process that it is their little baby. They are finally coming to the grips that, okay, Junior's not going to take it over and management doesn't have the wherewithal and I do want to sell it because I do recognize there's life beyond it. Then, you know, we help simplify that process for them, and they need to be able, the business owners need to be able to visualize themselves beyond this entity, as opposed to being, you know, going to die there, because we don't want to see that.
Yes, exactly. Well, after you've created an entity of so much value, you really want to make sure that you're maximizing it.
Sure.
At that standpoint. And it's time to turn to experts who really know the best way to put a value on it and then position it in the marketplace with people that would be interested in perhaps purchasing it.
It is typically their single largest asset. There's no question about it. So helping them steward and manage that process is really important, and, you know, a lot of responsibility, but it's good. It's fun.
So, Stuart, what would you recommend to other business owners who are maybe thinking, well, selling my business, that might be something, maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but at some point I want to go in that direction. What would you recommend they do?
Sure. Get a plan and kind of work it backwards. I mean, figure out where you are in the grand scheme of things. When do you think you want to sell it? What's that timeline? And have you put all these little steps in place? Again, the buyers are going to look at it, again, from a financial perspective. You know, what is the product? What is the cash flow? How scalable it is? Does the management team, are they in place? You know, the most important there will be the second in command. Thereafter, it'll be a head of sales. So those, you know, you need to have a management team that you're transferring to the new ownership, because what are they buying in lots of cases?
Right.
So that's important.
So the processes and sort of that infrastructure that you've built, this is how we do things, and then the people that are actually doing the things. I mean, that intellectual property of the people that are coming to work every day and,
mm-hmm.
and running the business.
Definitely. That's the most, in many cases, the most important asset that you're transferring.
Right. So make investments that are going to actually yield a return later on, it
sure.
sounds like, is the philosophy here.
And don't also, you know, make the mistake, or be careful not to make the mistake that doing deals today, that it could affect your valuation down the road. You know, whether it's leases or contracts or agreements in place that, you know, could hold up the process when you do come time to selling it.
So anytime you're putting a future legal obligation on the business's books, that needs to be considered in terms of the effect that's ultimately going to have.
Absolutely.
On the way the business is valued. Interesting. Wow, so there's so much more to it than just making the donuts.
Yes, indeed. Just show up and collect the money. That's all you do.
Well, Stuart, this has been very interesting, and I've really enjoyed getting to know you and having
you
on the show today. How can people find you and reach out to you for more of your expertise and advice?
Sure. I'd recommend you go to our website, and we've done a partnership relationship with John Warlow. He's the author of a book called Built to Sell. And on our website, there is a button, or there will be one in the next 24 hours, I think, that gives the clients or prospective clients an opportunity to take a quick questionnaire. I think it's less than 15 minutes, but it'll help them diagnose their business and see how it'll be seen in the marketplace. And, of course, it's free to our, you know, clients and prospects, and it also helps them. It gives them a tangible number in terms of what the business will look like. And so our website is thebusinesshouseinc.com, and it's all spelled out, thebusinesshouseinc.com.
Awesome. Well, I'm sure everybody's making a mad rush over there right now. I sure am, as soon as I wrap this up. Sounds like a lot of helpful information for business owners. So,
any way we can.
Thank you so much, and thank you all for tuning in this week. We will talk to you again next time. This is Elizabeth Gordon signing off.